Welcome to Sidetracks. I'm Mark Greenberg. Today, a visit with composer Bruce Chalmers. Bruce Chalmers moved to Vermont in 1972 from Buffalo. As a child, he'd sung in his synagogue choir and learned to lead services. Chalmers soon became involved in Montpelier's Beth Jacobs Synagogue as a lay service leader and music director. In 2000, he was preparing vocal music for the choir he now directed at Beth Jacob when he had a revelation about Ahavat Olam, a blessing about God's love.
Ahavat Olam, Beit Israel,
Ahavat Olam literally means eternal love or infinite love. And so what you're saying in Ahavat Olam is that God has loved us, you know, eternally. And then you do Shema, which is talking about unity. And then right after that, you recite a passage that occurs in the Bible right after the Shema, V'ahavta, which is talking about our love for God. So the Shema itself, the image there is one of sexual union, actually. That's the moment of unity is when you say Shema. So here's this text saying, you've loved us eternally, but please don't take your love away from us. And I figured, well, you can set this as a torch song, because it's basically a lover saying, you've loved me, please don't stop loving me. And so I figured, well, I'll set it as kind of a bluesy number. And then I looked at the text and discovered that the rhythms of the text, I couldn't but believe that the rabbis who composed this text were thinking of it as a blues number. It seemed so incredibly inevitable. The rhyming structure, the way you could do a refrain on the word le'olam, and then in a parallel number of beats later, le'olamim, you know, you can play with that stuff.
Chalmers' discovery led him to arrange a few more blessings, brachot in Hebrew, in unconventional ways, and to realize that this combination of traditional texts and modern music is central to who he is as a Jew and as a musician, and to the Hebrew concept of midrash.
Midrash, the word itself, comes from a Hebrew root meaning to search out. Midrash is central to how you interact with texts in Judaism. You take the text and then you go from there, and you can go in many different directions, often mutually contradictory to each other, and they're all considered part of the interaction with the sacred, even if they're presenting wildly different views of the situation. And so to interact with sacred text in a way that is enlivening means to make the story broader rather than to narrow it down. And that's what Midrash is all about, to search out meanings in an associative sense. It's interacting with sacred text as poetry. And so for me to interact with text in that way that feels alive, it's essential. It's essential to who I am as a Jew. It's essential to who I am as a person. I think it's essential to living spirituality.
Chalmers then began composing settings for more brachot, 26 in all, some from Hebrew texts and some from his own poems in English. The result was Brachot, a Midrash cantata, which has just been released on CD on Multicultural Media's Rootstock label. Chalmers organized the cantata as a series of cycles.
The liturgical pieces, they're organized more or less in the order of the daily service from morning to evening. You'll also find in terms of musical style, there is a tendency for the earlier ones to sound earlier. Certainly some of the early ones are more likely to be homophonic or monophonic. When we get into some of the pieces representing the Sheva Brachot, the seven blessings of a wedding ceremony, there's one piece in there that's intended to sound Baroque-like.
Occipital bone forms the posterior portion of the back.
Later on in the piece, there's a totally jarring kind of atonal piece where the theme is death. So you can see the general progression is from early to late. However, it's not totally consistent. The topics flow rather the way topics in the Talmud flow from one to another. Oh, while we're on the subject of that rabbi, here's what he also said. Well, in this cantata, While we're on the subject of one kind of musical style, something else will come up that might have some pretty oblique relationship, but it gets connected that way. Also, there's a couple of pieces that are more or less comments on the entire work. The very first one, which is just called Brachot, is quite short, and it's just a repetition of the word Brachot, and each repetition is a very subtly different kind of style, as you might hear a cantor singing it, or as you might hear someone singing it outside of a synagogue. And then the very last piece repeats the themes of the first piece, so it sort of ties the whole thing together and makes it a circle rather than a straight line. The themes also progress through the stages of life. There are references early on to courtship, followed by a reference to sexuality, followed by a reference to the wedding, followed by a reference to something that would be said by a bar bat mitzvah at the age of 12 or 13, followed by references to death. It sort of takes you through the life cycle as well. So there's interlocking cycles going on.
Chalmer, who plays recorders in the cantata, is joined on the recording by his colleagues in the Fire and Lightning Consort.
The Fire and Lightning, the group, is among the most versatile musicians I know. Originally, we played early music of Europe. We've played traditional music of the British Isles. We played programs of Italian Renaissance music, Spanish music from varying periods, quite a variety of different forms of sort of European-based early music. They play pretty much everything anybody ever created, and often can sing and play them simultaneously, except when they're playing recorders.
The cantata also features tenor Roger Groh.
Mika mocha balim Adonai, mika mocha nedar bakodesh, noratehi.
When I was writing my cantata, I knew I wanted to invite Roger to be involved in this as well. He has a absolutely magnificent tenor voice, beautiful tenor voice, a very versatile musician. So I wrote a lot of sections of the cantata totally with Roger in mind. The tenor voice parts I wrote were for him to sing, and I was just delighted that he actually did.
One of the major influences on Chalmer in writing the cantata was J.S. Bach, although, as Chalmer points out, there is no Bach in the final composition.
The spirituality in the order of Bach, that's been a profound influence on me. The different ways one can express very serious thought, even if you're expressing it whimsically, through a variety of different styles, that's always been part of my development. Just the sheer multiplicity of composers, multiplicity of styles, and how Judaism interacts with that, especially in an American context. That's been very important to me. You hear in the cantata, I've got a barbershop quartet in there. I mean, some of that is clearly whimsical and it's facetious a bit. But also there's a serious element to it. It's that, no, you can express some of these things even through something as wacky as barbershop quartet. To be a Jew is to be living in many cultures and yet having your own as well. I think that's become very much central to Jewish identity. As an American Jew, we so partake in our surroundings, and it's quite traditional to do that. We don't claim that being Jewish is the way to be for everybody. I remember as a kid being told Judaism is the best religion for Jews. So as an American Jew, we've taken on so much in terms of musical styles, and we've contributed to American musical styles to such an extent in so many different ways. There's so many Jewish classical musicians. There's Gershwin and many Jewish blues and jazz musicians that it's sort of integral to the experience of an American Jew to embrace variety. And it's vital to being a Jew. You know, you can't be a Jew and not know how to live in a variety of different cultures. It's also brought forth in Jewish culture a richness of ideas that I don't think we would have had we not been willing to accept from other cultures ideas worth accepting.
Hashkivenu Adonai Eloheinu.
Another major Jewish influence is Salomone Rossi, whose work has become much better known in the past, oh, I'd say 10, 15 years than it had previously. And one of my pieces is a tribute to Rossi in that I shamelessly stole a couple of his chord progressions and put them in a different context and tried to emulate some of his style in the second last piece of the work.
That's Hashkivenu from Brachot, a Midrash cantata. Another section, Baruch Sha'amar, takes a more lighthearted view of interpreting sacred Jewish text.
People who are familiar with the process of interpretation of sacred text, they could look at this and think it quite ridiculous. And that's because it is quite ridiculous. It's one of the most convoluted pieces of pseudo-Talmudic reasoning I've ever encountered, and I wrote it myself. I wrestled a couple of texts, very much against their will, I'm sure, into an interpretation that says that God created the world with laughter, because it relates to an interpretation of the word yehi in the Hebrew phrase yehi or. Yehi or is how, in Hebrew, let there be light. Yehi means let there be. So I managed to get these texts to, I insisted that they mean that God created the world on the word yehi, which sounds like laughter. And so then I set the word yehi in a sort of a quasi-reggae style. The last of the Sheva Brachot, the last of the seven blessings, is a joyous recitation of all the reasons to be happy. Kol Sason v'Kol Simcha, the voice of gladness and the voice of joy. And what better setting than klezmer? What happens in a wedding ceremony, as soon as that blessing has been done, right at the end of it, that's when the groom stomps on the glass and everybody yells Mazel Tov. So what I put in the piece is a chord which I refer to as the Mazel Tov chord. And at that moment, you can hear it happening. Everybody goes boink, and that's when the groom is stepping on the glass. And then it breaks into this joyous klezmery kind of tune. And the image you can have there is of the bride and groom going out and, everybody starting to dance.
She's gonna call.
She's gonna call her children home.
She's gonna call.
She's gonna call her children home.
She's gonna call
her children home.
Kibbutz Baneha is a setting related to one of the seven blessings, the Sheva Brachot, in the wedding ceremony. In the wedding ceremony, you refer to not merely the couple themselves, but it's the entire community and really the entire universe kind of gets included in among the seven blessings. This one is very specifically about the Jewish people being gathered together. And so in thinking of how to set a midrashic interpretation of that, somehow the idea of gospel came to me as a very appropriate setting for this. Of course, gospel music, if it's set in what they refer to as the Old Testament as opposed to the New Testament, is setting Jewish texts. So again, there's that tradition. And it just seemed to be a very appropriate setting, and it was a lot of fun.
Gonna gather her children home.
That's Kibbutz Baneha from Bruce Chalmers' Midrash Cantata. Chalmers sees the section titled Lech Lecha as summarizing the entire work.
I left my father's lamplight, crossed the moon-splashed river.
It's a vision that Abraham might have seen when he was called by God to leave where he was. He was told, Lech Lecha. You can translate that, get going, or go to yourself. There's a lot of different ways of translating it. And it really marks the beginning of Abraham's career, and in that sense, it's the beginning of the Jewish people. And I did a sort of associative poem. It covers the entire range of Jewish history. There are little references here and there, which again, I don't want to be too explicit about because you don't have to hear it that way, and that's just fine. But there are references in there to various points of Jewish experience from the very beginning through the slavery in Egypt, through the liberation, all the way up to the present time. So, in a sense, that particular piece encapsulates a lot of the work.
Bruce Chalmer, his Brachot, a Midrash cantata, has just been released on CD on Multicultural Media's Rootstock label. For Sidetracks, I'm Mark Greenberg.